The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to the latest edition of Circling the Bases. I'm DJ Short, and I'm joined here once again by Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. We're live on Twitch right now, so welcome to our audience there. And if you're listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube, we're recording on Monday afternoon. Some really fun college basketball this weekend, kind of taking center stage, but also the World Baseball Classic has been thrilling as it starts to wrap up. But of course, we are right in the middle of fantasy draft season, so I'll bring you in here, Scott. I know you're playing hurt here, not quite 100%, but I appreciate you joining me here this afternoon.
Yeah, my pleasure, and you're right. We are right smack dab in the middle of draft season. I was not able to attend Tet Wars in person, but I want to give a shout-out to Ron Chandler, who was my auction proxy for the Mixed League and did a great job. I gave him a list of targets, and he did not land a player I didn't like. So he avoided the guys I wanted to avoid. He got a lot of the targets I wanted. Every player, I'd given him a color-coded sheet where green players were players I strongly liked. Blue players were players that I was probably ahead of market on. Yellow players were a somewhat of a fade, and red players were, please don't come back with this player. And everybody he got me was green or blue. So he did a great job. I thought he was happy with the result too, but he was steered by the players that I liked. So he pinch hit for me. It was great. And I just want to say thanks for that. And I'm doing an article later this week on Yahoo called What's in My Wallet. And a lot of my wallet, the players I've drafted, a lot of the players I really feel good about this year. And a lot of those players, one of them we may talk about today, Marcus Simeon, were on that Tout Wars team. So for more on that, look for my article later in the week on Yahoo.
Yeah, Ron Chandler, not a bad backup plan. I wish the Mets had a Ron Chandler backup at closer. Sure. I don't know if David Robertson qualifies there. But certainly Chandler is a legend in fantasy baseball, and I'm participating right now in NL only labor this season, and Ron Chandler is in my league, which is pretty crazy because I've been reading him since I knew what fantasy baseball was. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, one of the founding fathers of fantasy analysis, and introduced a lot of the methods and techniques that we're using are things that Ron was first to run, that he pioneered. So, and just a really nice guy too, and a baseball fan. And just, I'm happy to call him a friend, and I'm happy to call him I'm going to manage the team from here on out. I told Ron, I said, look, if this works, it's all on you. And if it doesn't work, you can blame me. But we had a lot of fun with it. And, we talk on this podcast, right, about how dual ownership, and then again, Ron's not going to manage a team in season, but a lot of times two heads are better than one when it comes to fantasy. Yeah. And I think we worked really well together, given that this was the last minute arrangement. We had about a day to put it together. And I was thrilled with the results. Of course, everybody should like their team to some extent on draft day. What you do with it, that's why you're here, right? I mean, we're not just going to help you during the draft season, but we're going to help you during the season. And that's why you got to go to Roto World and get the app and all that, because you need all this stuff. And the news changes every day, right? I mean, we could probably do a show every day if we wanted to, because there's just been so much news generated right now.
Yeah, well, two major developments we're going to get to right at the top here. But before we do, a quick word for our listeners. New MLB season, new rules, new stars. So pair it with the RotoWorld Baseball Draft Guide. Get all the player profiles, rankings, and projections you need to hit your draft out of the park. Go to nbcsportsedge.com/draftguide and use our promo code, a special promo code here, Pennant25, to save 25% off at checkout. Again, that's Pennant25. Check it out today. We actually today posted our Leveraging the Default Rankings article, which takes Yahoo rankings, but also ESPN, CBS, and tries to uncover some late round values. I think a lot of the value of a column like that is to point out like the players that are way down in default rankings who you can get in the later rounds. So maybe if you're late in a draft, you forget they're even there, But you know, you can read this article and see for each site where these players are at. I think it's super helpful.
For sure. One of the most important articles of the year. Back when I used to work for Fantasy Guru, I used to call it the buried treasure article. That's what the brand that we gave it to. And I'll even give you one of my buried treasures guys who showed up on my tout team. He'll be in my What's in the Wallet piece, and he'll fit into the Elvis. I'm starting to say his name. He'll fit into the Jose Altuve news, because we're going to say, what do you do at second base? Jose Altuve's hurt.
Right.
Elvis Andrews is only shortstop eligible right now, but he's going to play second base for the White Sox. So in Yahoo language, that means he'll be second base eligible by the end of the first week, because you only need five games in Yahoo.
Yep.
I don't know what went wrong with Elvis Andrews last year in Oakland, but he was a category juice machine in his 40 or so games in Chicago. I know he's not a big OBP guy, and that's, you know, I'll take that ding in Tout Wars, which uses OBP, but I think he's going to get, I don't know, 10, 12 home runs, 15, 20 steals. He'll play every day. He'll qualify at two positions. He'll probably hit for a plus average. And I don't have his Yahoo ADP off the top of my head, but I know it's low. I know he's, in fact, I've been in drafts and forgotten he's available and missed out on Andrews. I think in TGFBI, he got drafted. I'm like, oh man, I wanted Elvis Andrews. I just forgot to put him in my queue. So he's somebody, again, not second base eligible yet, but he will be quickly in Yahoo, and in all other formats, he'll have that tag by the end of April. I still think he's got a lot of kick left in his early 30s.
Hey, yeah. I mean, much respect to him for keeping his career alive as he moves into his mid-30s. I mean, I think he came up in 2009, and here we are in 2023, and he's still relevant in the fantasy game. So that's pretty cool. And as far as Yahoo drafts are concerned, you can edit your pre-draft rankings as well. So if you want to bump up some of those guys so you know you won't miss them, of course, you could put them in your queue too, but you can change your rankings to tailor the kind of players you're targeting. So that's a really useful tool in Yahoo as well. So let's get straight to it. You mentioned a little bit already about Jose Altuve, of course, was hit by a pitch by Daniel Bard on Saturday night. And turns out, yeah, he broke that thumb. We don't know how long he'll be out yet. He's scheduled to have a surgery probably later this week. The Astros are waiting for the swelling to go down before actually, you know, going ahead on that surgery. But the early expectations are 8 to 10 weeks. The Astros haven't officially said that, but I think, you know, we'll hear it after surgery. But that's the expectation right now. So we're probably talking June before we see Jose Altuve, which is a horrible blow for the Astros, but also for the second base position in fantasy leagues, which was already thin to begin with. And for the Astros, they're likely turning to David Hensley, Mauricio Dubon. I don't think they're necessarily players that are going to be relevant in mixed leagues, but Hensley's sort of interesting. He's put up some good numbers in AA and AAA over the past couple of seasons. Good approach, good speed. Again, not someone you'd target in a mixed league, but in a deeper format, certainly AL only, I think he's someone to keep an eye on here as spring training wraps up.
Yeah, my friend Joe Sheehan was talking about the Astros in passing. He wrote about the Mariners today. He's like, maybe it's just one of those bad years for injuries with Astros. McCullers already hurt.
Yeah.
We know Jordan Alvarez has been dealing with an injury all spring. We're not really sure where he's at. Now they lose Altuve for, it sounds like, a couple of months. And here's the catch with Altuve. It's not like players like this come back and I expect them to hit the ground running. This is the type of injury where I wouldn't be surprised if his power was suppressed for most of the season. And this is not, I always say that it's not fun to play fantasy baseball like an actuary, but I think you have to sometimes. I'm just not going to draft Altuve unless he falls so significantly that it's absurd that he hasn't been taken. Because I always say that I don't want drafting to injuries because they're going to find me. I'm not looking to find injured players already. And it's no fun to say that. Jose Altuve is a borderline Hall of Famer, you know, and he's an all-star. He's won an MVP before. He's been a five-category player, and he plays on an offense that we expect to be a plus offense. You want to draft into all those things, but
right.
My advice right now would be just don't draft Jose Altuve unless it's such a screaming value you can't avoid it. And somebody will probably at some point take the plunge. And again, the problem isn't just that he's going to miss so much time, but and then the other guy's hurt. And what happens when he comes back? I mean, you know, maybe a month in, it's like, you know, I think at the end of the year, you can hear him say, I didn't feel right the whole season or something like that. You know, last year, Alex Bregman, right, came back from wrist surgery. He didn't really hit well for like 10 weeks. it took him a while. Alex Bregman in the second half was the Bregman we expect. I think he's actually a pretty good value. He's probably the player I'm going to draft the most on this offense this year. But again, actuary fantasy drafting, no fun, but I'm not going to take Altuve.
So we are going to shuffle up second base. I'm stealing your term there, Scott. Mm-hmm. And I figured it'd be a good time to do it. Second base, a position which was weak going into drafts, but could get more interesting as more players actually qualify at second base as we get into the season. But just a little aside here about the World Baseball Classic. We know Edwin Diaz injured his knee in a really, freak injury celebration. He's most likely going to miss the entire season. Nolan Arenado was hit in the hand by a pitch on Sunday. It seems like he's fine. X-rays were negative. Yoan Moncada bruised his ribs in a collision in Sunday's game, USA versus Cuba. It seems like he's going to be fine. Tested negative for a concussion, so I think he'll be fine. But I think it keeps – every time these little things happen, the question keeps coming up, is it worth it to do the World Baseball Classic? That's been a lot of the chatter, especially among, emotional Mets fans, which – is everyone, including me. But, is it worth it to do this? Is the risk too great? Where do you fall on this, Scott?
I come down – here's the best way to say it. I think of my friend Dave Damashek from the Great Minus Three podcast, and he's been worked for a million different sites. And he talks about living is so much better than surviving. And that to me, the World Baseball Classic is living. It's players playing for camaraderie. It's players playing for joy. It's players playing for competition. There's no prize money. It's not a world championship. It's doing it for the love of your country and to want to be around the other guys. And that interview they did with Adam Wainwright, where they asked him, his wife asked him who his favorite player was on the team. And he ended up going through the whole roster. He's like, oh yeah, I love that guy. I love that guy. I love that guy. Every time a player retires, and they talk to him a year or two later, he says, what do you miss? And they all say the camaraderie. They miss the competition. And then this is what this event is about. Yeah. With all due respect to Mexico, I'm really hoping Japan wins the other semifinal and we get a Japan-United States final, which would just be unbelievable. I have not been able to watch as much of the World Baseball Classic between being ill for a little bit and dealing, the NCAA basketball tournament and everything. But I will watch every pitch of the final, and then USA-Japan would be fantastic. Although Mexico is a great team too. Yeah. Again, I go back to the Damashek quote, living is better than surviving. And to me, playing in the WBC is living. There's so much passion there. There's so much joy. Look at one of the home runs that Turner hit. It feels like he's hitting one every day. And then he goes back to the bench and everybody's going crazy, or that unbelievable celebration scene after Otani hit that moonshot about a week ago. I want to see more of that. Now, there's just no way to bubble wrap these guys. By the way, while players are getting hurt in the World Baseball Classic, players are getting hurt in spring training. Exactly. Because it's just a fact of life. And the Diaz injury is just one of those fluky things in a celebration. I mean, you can get hurt closing your car door. You can get hurt falling out of bed the wrong way. You can get hurt putting a Q-tip in your ear. There's just no – what do you want these guys to do, not do anything? I mean, it sucks that players get hurt. Nobody enjoys that. But to me, I think we should live, not survive. And so I think the World Baseball Classic should be here. I want to have it every handful of years. I think it's a wonderful event.
Yeah, and Major League Baseball isn't some, it's a business. This is a business. The World Baseball Classic is an event that they're selling tickets for and making money with through television contracts, et cetera. But this is one of those things where, in a way, this is the best promotion you could give to the sport of baseball, is to have these players so excited, Japan, all these other countries, and really advertising the sport of baseball. And you look at the numbers in Japan, the number of people watching, Puerto Rico. I mean, this is an incredibly popular event. And I think for the future of baseball, it's incredibly important to keep this going. There's debate about whether it should be, at the All-Star break or after the season, whatever it is. I don't think that this event is going away. It's just much too successful.
Totally agree. I mean, it's become what it should be, the World Cup of Baseball. And I think back to, this is date myself a little bit, I'm a big hockey fan. And one of the greatest hockey moments outside the NHL was the Canada Cup in 1987 when Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux played on the same line. And the game-winning goal was scored by Lemieux, who was then was, kind of the new superstar on the block with a pass from Gretzky. And Canadian hockey fans will still talk about that as one of the five greatest moments in hockey history. you know, or this predates me, but you know, Paul Henderson scoring in the Canada Cup in 1972. Everybody remembers who was alive for it, the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, the American team that beat the Soviet Union and then had to beat Finland in the gold medal game. Of course, it all would have gone in for naught if they hadn't beaten Finland, and they came back in the third period. Great movie on that called Miracle that everybody should watch, or any of the documentaries. HBO did one. These are, you know, the World Cup. Look how awesome the World Cup was a few months ago. We saw maybe the best World Cup final, right? You know, if some of these World Baseball Classic deniers, you don't like the World Cup, you don't like, and none of those Olympic hockey moments did anything for you, or the Canada Cup moments. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm all for let's get these players in different. This is kind of like the soccer motif, right? Where a world-class soccer player will play for a team, but he'll play for his country, and they'll play in these different tournaments. And yeah, guys get hurt sometimes. It's part. There's no way to take. You can't make sports completely safe, you know. And you can do whatever you can. You know, there's always going to be a concussion problem in the NFL, and it's always going to be physical and violent. And we have to try to be reasonable and prudent about it. But I don't know. I think the World Baseball Classic is great, and the people who it's interesting to me, the people who are denouncing it are the people who would like boo a lemonade stand, or, you know, who would boo like a Little League game. I mean, some of the people who are against everything, I'm not going to name any names. You can probably come up with these people on your own. They're the people on Twitter banging the drum hardest of get rid of the WBC. So if they're on that side of it, I'm proud to be against that.
It's cool to see Mike Trout playing in games that matter, and you can see how much it matters to him to actually have an opportunity to win something on a big stage, which he absolutely deserves. And the fact that
Ohtani too, man. Yeah. I mean, he's on a big stage too, and they may be in the final in another day or so.
Oh, that would be something. Ohtani might be available in relief. Like, we'll see. It could be pretty awesome. So let's move on to some more second base developments. Jorge Polanco, one I actually forgot about coming into my rundown on the show. So he has this lingering knee issue, dealt with it toward the end of last season. That discomfort has lingered. He's yet to appear in a spring training game. Now unlikely to be ready for the season. You know, maybe it's only a couple of weeks, but it's something to keep in mind as we look at the top 12 at second base, which we're going to run down here in a minute. And the other one I want to get to here, which I think is interesting, is Vaughn Grissom, who had a lot of hype during the offseason, expected to take over the starting shortstop job. Of course, Dansby Swanson signed with the Cubs during the offseason, but Grissom was held out of, he didn't start for the fifth straight game on Sunday. So held out of the starting lineup at shortstop. He's back in there on Monday, but the Braves are giving a long look here to Braden Shoemake, another prospect in their pipeline who is the better defensive option for sure, but the numbers offensively haven't been great. Orlando Arcia is another option there for the Braves. Maybe Shoemake and Arcia will share the job there if they don't go with Grissom. But obviously at this point, the Braves are seriously thinking about maybe Grissom starting the year in AAA. And I think this all comes down to his ability to play the position. Ron Washington put a lot of faith into Grissom, worked with him during the offseason, trying to prepare him for shortstop. But in the end, the Braves just might not think he's the guy. And I think Shoemake's playing so much shortstop recently is just them trying to make sure that's the right call. I wouldn't say that Grissom is definitely not going to be the shortstop on opening day or have a significant role. But I think it's a lot more in question than we ever thought it could be coming into spring training.
Yeah, I hope Ron Washington told him it's incredibly hard when they get together to go over the defensive position. Look, the Braves have so much offense that they can take, and we're in a golden age of offensive shortstops, but the Braves can take an old school approach to this position and go defense first if they want to, and send Grissom down for more seasoning if they deem that appropriate. Grissom, as you said, didn't play for five games. I'd be petrified. I'd be afraid to draft Grissom right now. I can't do it. I just too much smoke here, and the Braves have too many options, and they don't need to go offense only at the position because they have so many hitters at other positions that if they have to carry a substandard offensive shortstop because he's a good defender, they'll do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would love to see Grissom just get a shot. Like, let's just see what he can do. But the NL East is going to be super competitive, so I think they just want that shorthanded option at shortstop. And hey, if Shoemake comes out of the gate and he's hitting like 200 on May 15th, like we're probably going to see Vaughn Grissom. You know what I mean? So we'll see. It's far from decided, but clearly the Braves are considering it. So it's something to keep an eye on here. And, you know, I think Grissom is someone that if you did an early draft, was probably drafted in the middle rounds at a position where we thought it was going to be weak. But we're going to shuffle up our second base rankings now. We actually did a second base podcast episode in early February. I think it was the first day we recorded was first base and second base, and that was the first week of February. And here we are, you know, 6 weeks later. And I personally, I've moved some guys around a little bit here, accounting for the Altuve injury, but also other factors as well. So I'm going to start with you here, Scott, because I remember you had Grissom in your top 12. Mm-hmm. Where you sit today on March 20th at second base?
Yeah, he's not in my top 15. How do you want me to run this down? You want me to start at 15 or 12?
Yeah.
Or?
You can, let's start at 12.
Okay.
At
12. So at 12, I have Jonathan India, who's part of a Reds offense that I'm trying to draft proactively into a great hitter's park. Coming off an injury, I think he can be a 4, maybe even a 5 category player. Thairo Estrada is number 11 for me, qualifies at multiple positions, probably parked at the top of the San Francisco lineup. I'm thinking double-digit home runs, probably another 20 stolen bases. Brandon Lau, everything went wrong last year. He hit 39 home runs 2 years back, so I think we can't go too low on him. He's my number 10 second baseman. Max Muncy, another comeback player, big theme at this position, qualifies at multiple spots, though. We'll have good real estate in the middle of the Dodgers lineup. Maybe you'll use him at third base. Maybe you'll use him at second base. I think Muncy has a comeback year. Although I slotted Altuve at second baseman 8, don't want to draft him, as I talked about earlier. And I guess I'll stop at 7. Gleyber Torres, part of a fluid Yankees lineup, I think he'll be in the lineup 6 days out of 7, is my number 7 second baseman right now.
All right. So for me, it's similar. So I have Ketel Marte at 12. Looking for a bounce back there in a Diamondbacks lineup, which I think has a chance to be pretty good. Marte's, it feels like every year it's like back and forth, whether he's good or he's not or he's hurt. But I believe in what he can do kind of across the board. 11, I have Thairo Estrada. 10, I have Jonathan India. 9, Brandon Lau. 8, Jose Altuve as well. And for me, I think when you're looking at the grand scheme of things, you know, the 5,000-foot view or whatever you want to call it, I think Altuve is probably on the edge of being a top 100 player in drafts right now, maybe a little later, but that's kind of where I see him at this moment.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I have Max Muncy at number 7. Low average, but in the middle of the Dodgers lineup, power, RBIs, run scored, that's going to be there. He doesn't run, but I still think enough across the board in a good situation to be very useful, and I believe in the bounce back there.
Yeah, I do too. Still young too, young 30s, and I could see him hitting 30 home runs. As far as my top 6 goes, and I want everybody to know I'm using Yahoo eligibility for this. This may be different for different leagues, which is why my number 1 second baseman may not be the same as everybody's. But Tommy Edman's actually a fade for me, but I do have him at number 6. I'm just not sure that he keeps the leadoff spot all season for the Cardinals, which is why I'm a little bit reluctant to draft him. Andrés Giménez is my number 5 second baseman. He also qualifies as shortstop, one of the most underrated parts of that Cleveland lineup. Ozzy Albies, a very known commodity, somebody we can hang our hat on coming off an injury. Number 4 in a really good Atlanta lineup. Number 3 is Jazz Chisholm. I don't have any Jazz Chisholm yet this year. It really concerns me. We know he'll be probably playing center field most of the year, but I could see a 20 home or 40 steal season very much in his range of outcomes. I'd like to get some shares before the season gets going. Marcus Semien, I feel like I have on every one of my teams. Really simple. 5 or 6 weeks he didn't hit. The rest of the season he produced like a first-round player. He's actually a top 5 fantasy player, being drafted sometimes as late as the 3rd round. I think that's a steal. Qualifies at 2 positions. Go get him. And because Yahoo does qualify Mookie Betts at second base in addition to the outfield, I don't think I need to sell you on Mookie Betts. I realize he's probably in the back nine of his career, but whenever you lost money on Mookie Betts, I'd be happy to draft him and play him anywhere you want. You can play him a catcher if you want. I don't know. play him a point guard. Mookie Betts is on my team.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the cheat code there if you want to put Mookie Betts at second base. Outfield's a little top-heavy this year, as we've discussed, so I think at the very least it would just give you options, but chances are, given the state of the second base position, you would put Mookie in there at second base. I don't have Mookie in my top 12, but I mean, obviously he's the default number one if he's eligible in your format. Gleyber Torres I have at number 6. Tommy Edman I have at number 5, who I haven't really drafted anywhere, but again, given the state of the position, you know, there's a safe floor at the speed, so I'll go with that. Andrés Giménez, who I have questions about his ability to repeat, but I think he'll be fine and also has a safe floor with the speed. Ozzie Albies, number 3 for me. I'm looking at a bounce back campaign there. Marcus Semien, I have number 2. I'm going to stick with my bold prediction of Jazz Chisholm. When it's all said and done at the end of the year, Jazz Chisholm will be that 20 homer, 40 steal guy who will be drafted in the first round next season. Maybe he won't be as attractive as if he's outfield only eligible. We'll see. But I think we're going to see a big, big season from Jazz Chisholm.
Man, I think you're definitely right on there. And at some point, I'm going to do a FOMO draft and just make sure I get you at Chisholm. If you're going cheap at the position, I'll give you the 90210 approved cheap options at the position. One Brendan, one Brandon. I'm always confusing which one's the Brandon, which one's the Brendan. Brandon Drury is not going to repeat what he did last year, but qualifies 3 positions. I love that eligibility. He will play for the Angels and probably hit in a good lineup spot, not too far down from Ohtani and Trout. So I'm happy to roster Brandon Drury. Now, Brendan Donovan qualifies, I think, at every Yahoo position but catcher, all 4 infield spots, yeah. Outfield. Now, the question is, well, is kind of an empty batting average or any category juice here? He's actually shown power this spring.
Yeah, he has.
And I'd like to have Brendan Donovan, especially in leagues where you can get a lot of mileage out of that positional flexibility. You're in a daily transactions league. You're in a league where they have multiple transaction periods per week. It's just so nice to be positionless when injuries hit, and you can take the best player off your bench and put him in there because you have Brendan Donovan to float around somewhere, Brandon Drury, or whoever it is. So there's a couple of cheaper options who qualify at multiple positions, and they're very affordable in Yahoo drafts.
So 3 names I wanted to mention here. While second base looks kind of bleak right now, there are 3 significant players, and you mentioned Elvis Andrews, so maybe he could fall in this group too, players who were gained second base eligibility early in the season. One's Ryan McMahon. He's expected to play second base for the Rockies due to the Brendan Rodgers injury. So he's one to keep an eye on early in the season. He'll get that second base eligibility. I think you'll probably mostly use him at Coors, you know, if your league can allows for daily lineup changes. But I like the power there. Nico Horner is going to play second base for the Cubs with Dansby Swanson taking over at shortstop. I feel like I've drafted Nico Horner like 30 times this spring. He is a really useful player and someone who will bat leadoff for the Cubs. I think there's more speed in there. I think he can hit double-digit homers. I love Nico Horner this spring. Miguel Vargas on the Dodgers, too, is going to be their regular second baseman this season, at least as of now. I think that Dodgers infield defensively may not be great, but Vargas is expected to play there. I think he's going to put up some useful numbers as a rookie. So while things look rough right now, help is on the way. And also remember, we have 2 batting champs, Jeff McNeil, Luis Arraez, who are there as options to not necessarily, you know, tons of counting stats, but batting average wise, at least you know you can bank on that. They're going to be on base. Runs scored will be there. Just not sure all across the board if they're all that reliable.
Yeah, you mentioned a lot of interesting guys there. You know, Horner is an outstanding defender, which will keep him on the field. And I agree with you. I think he's underrated. I have a lot of Estrada, but Horner is very much a similar type of player. And yeah. I think he makes a lot of fantasy sense. Isn't it weird to see a team like the Dodgers have as much roster in flux right now? We don't know who their outfield is right now. They don't have a closer picked yet. It sure seems like Vargas is ticketed to be the second baseman, though. And I think he's been a screaming value all spring, too. And it's not quite the Dodgers lineup we've seen in recent years, where we talk about them in previous seasons as like a top 1, top 3, top 2 offense. They're more like a top 5, top 6 offense, and maybe as far down as top 10, but it's still a destination offense for me, even if it doesn't go 9 deep. And, you know, talk about injuries. They lost Gavin Lux earlier this spring, which was a big hit for them. They thought he would start for them, but I think Vargas has been lost in the shuffle. And again, I'd like to know who their closer is. I hope it's Evan Phillips. who was on my worst team and on a bunch of my teams. And I hope he gets the ninth inning. I'm not sure it's going to be him, but a lot up for grabs in LA this year.
Yeah, I mean, David Peralta's in the outfield. Trace Thompson's going to have a big role. Maybe James Outman. I mean, there's
Outman
just
too. Yeah, I'm really hoping it's Outman. They think maybe Jason Hayward can resurrect his career. I wouldn't bet on that, but Outman's the guy I'm interested in the outfield, the cheaper guy anyway.
So we're going to get in a couple of weekend headlines before we go. But first, a quick reminder, download the RotoWorld app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoring players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today. So as soon as you draft your team, start favoring these players and track them for injuries in the World Baseball Classic. I'm just kidding. Or spring training. But you got to start keeping track of this stuff, especially if you have closers that you want to speculate on. Like, you know, roles are going to start being decided here. We'll get into a little bit of that as we close out.
I can't remember if we talked about this. What was your post Diaz take on the Mets bullpen?
So it's going to be David Robertson, I would think. Certainly, you know, you go from someone who was just nails in the ninth inning, one of the most dominant pitchers in the sport, to now questions. I mean, I think Robertson is perfectly capable, but there are going to be days where he gets hit hard and they lose games, and that will be tough. I think he's the top option. Adam Ottavino is probably the other alternative. What worries me about Ottavino is he is so easy to run on. Mm-hmm. It's like an automatic, and I don't know if the pitch clock is going to make that worse. It probably will, but he's just an automatic. So do you want him there in a one-run game? Someone gets on base, like I worry about that. So I think
did
it has to be.
Did Ottavino have a platoon problem against lefties? I can't remember that.
Honestly, I think he's one of those guys that may work in reverse in some cases, I could be wrong about that. I'll have to double check after.
I should know that, and I don't remember too. With just the way Steve Cohen wants to run this team, that if there's any kind of hiccup, they'll try to go out and trade for somebody. And we know when the trading season does open, and that's generally the middle of the season. Relief pitching is one of the things, because, you know, there's no reason for any non-contending team to carry a closer or, you know, a big money reliever. It's an extravagance that a 65-70 win team doesn't need. So maybe the Pirates finally trade, you know, David Bednar, or, you know, there'll be closers out there, you know.
Right. I mean, Mets fans immediately speculated about Alexis Diaz, who's Edwin's brother, who's on the Reds. I don't think that, you know, why would the Reds give away a cost-controlled young reliever? I don't think it's going to happen. So Ottavino last year, lefties hit him better than righties. So I'm not wrong about that.
Okay.
So righties had a 479 OPS against Ottavino last year. Lefties 837. That's interesting. Brooks Raley is another option for the Mets, if the Mets want to play the matchups. So we'll see, but I think Robertson's the closer to draft. And, you know, if I had to think today where I would put him among closers, I would have put him in the top 20, but given the uncertainty, you know, and these other guys, Ottavino, Raley might get chances as well. I think it's just he's thrown into that big mess, like after the top 15, 16 closers. That's pretty much where I have him right now. Mets are very good, so maybe he'd surprise us and, you know, notch 30 saves. But as of now, that's where I've got him.
What's a good over-under, like maybe 16 saves?
I would take the over.
Okay, 20? What if I said 20?
I might still take the over.
Okay.
I think he's someone who could take – it could keep it maybe until the trade deadline. I don't know.
As it always is with these situations, the early appearances will be significant, right? I mean, if they have the first week of the season and Robertson reels off two or three saves, they'll think, okay, we got this. If he doesn't, if he has hiccups, it's a position where you don't get a lot of leash if you're not a locked-in guy. So he'll need to convert early. But a lot of times it's a three-run lead in the ninth inning against the 7, 8, 9 guys, you know? I mean, it's not that hard a job to do if you're just the push-button ninth-inning closer. So Robertson's a pro. I would think he could succeed in this role.
Yeah, I think if I had to, like, just name a pitcher I see in a similar spot on the draft board, it would probably be, like, Scott Barlow. Like, if I'm deciding between the two of them, I would take Robertson because Robertson's on the better team. I think the Mets can, even without Diaz, can still win 90 games. So just sort of right in that range, I think 16, 17-ish range among closers.
Let me throw you a couple other names, yeah, just really quick, and apologize for making this a 20-minute podcast about David Robertson, but would you rather have Robertson or either of the Seattle guys?
Probably. I'm going to take Robertson because I do not know which one will get the most saves come the end of year. I think Munoz, like, even if he's not getting saves, he could strike out 100 dudes and be very useful. It's like getting an extra starter per week on your team, basically. So I might come to regret that stance. But I think coming out of the draft, I just want safety. Like, closers are going to pop up during the year that you can grab. But I think Robertson's going to be a lot more secure in this role than it seems.
How about Robertson or Peter Fairbanks?
I really like Fairbanks this year. I think I would take Fairbanks over him. And I know, yeah, the Rays always keep us guessing too, but Fairbanks looks nasty right now.
Yeah, I think I lean that way too. One more. You mentioned Alexis Diaz, who I think is going to stay put in Cincinnati and certainly be their closer, although they've talked about maybe using him in the high leverage roles, which means seventh, eighth inning at times. Would you rather have Robertson or Diaz starting now?
Ooh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'll take Diaz. Yeah. But it's,
I think,
close.
I would too. I think I could see Diaz, you know, he's not quite where his brother's at, but I think he could strike out 95 guys.
Yeah. I could also see him like totally flaming out and be in AAA in June. So we'll see. Another injury scare here for the Mets. You know, I think it was like 24 hours removed from the Edwin Diaz situation. Brandon Nimmo limped off the field Friday night, was in serious pain. It looked really bad. Awkward slide into second base. But it turns out that Nimmo was diagnosed with low-grade sprains in his knee and ankle. The Mets initially called him week to week, but Nimmo said that he definitely thinks he'll be ready for opening day. You always have to keep athlete proclamations like that with a grain of salt, as they are always, without fail, overly optimistic. But certainly seems like things could have been much worse. And even if he's not there on opening day, Nimmo's absence will probably be a brief one. And I wouldn't push Nimmo down on my draft board at all. I've largely avoided him in drafts this year because I think generally, fantasy-wise, he tends to be a little overvalued because he doesn't run. The power is fine, but most of his value comes in his ability to get on base. So if it's an on-base percentage league, I'm aggressive. If it's a standard mixed league, not so aggressive. But for me, you know, if you're drafting today, I wouldn't push him down really at all.
Yeah, he's also somebody who I think we have to bake injury risk into his yearly price because he's had trouble staying on the field. A little bit ironic, right? He talked about not being interested in playing in the WBC, that his goal was to be ready for the Mets and try to win a World Series title. And then just a couple of days after, he ends up getting hurt. And you're so right about people from your lips to God's ears. You know, when players talk about their timetables, in one ear, out the other, because these guys have been superheroes their whole lives. And the last thing you want to do is say, I'm not available. I'm not a quick healer. You'll never hear that stuff. You know, sometimes guys are protecting their jobs or their livelihoods. So the players will give you the rosiest glasses possible. And you have to kind of see through that. I moved Nimmo down a little bit, but I'm like you, I was not high on him to begin with. Cause it's just, where's the category juice? He's a guy who's going to hit maybe 11 home runs and steal like six bases. And you're hoping his value would come from the good lineup real estate that he would have, you know, hopefully he'd bat leadoff, maybe he'd score 100 runs or somewhere in that neighborhood. But it's going to be hard to do that if he only plays 125, 130 games. I don't think he'll be ready on opening day. I would take him at my price. I'd have to get it now to draft him. So he's a fade for me at the moment.
Yep. Next up here, the Diamondbacks sent down prospect right-hander Brandon Pfaadt. He's not on the 40-man roster, which sometimes at the end of spring training, you know, the 40-man roster takes utmost importance as all these rosters are being put together. Pfaadt was reassigned to minor league camp on Sunday, along with a bunch of other cuts. Pfaadt has been a sensation in spring training, really raising some eyebrows, coming off leading the minors in strikeouts last year. He struck out 15 batters in 12 innings of work in Cactus League action. Pfaadt was probably a long shot to make the rotation when spring training began, but certainly has made an interesting case for himself. However, the fifth starter job in Arizona is now down to Jerry Jamison, Ryan Nelson, and Tommy Henry. I think at the very least, Pfaadt is one of those guys like, yeah, they're going to give a shot to these three other pitchers who are on the 40-man roster. have a little bit of major league experience, but if they falter, I think we're going to see Fott really quick. I think he'll be up by late April, early May. So don't forget about him. And if you have the ability to stash with like a deep bench, I think you should. I think among rookie pitchers, he could be top five most impactful this season.
Cosign. And if for whatever reason you can't stash him, you're in a league where it wouldn't make sense to stash him, he's the type of guy you might add on spec the moment he's recalled. And remember, he's 24. So, you know, they got to figure he's really close. And because he has such a high strikeout upside, and more than ever, especially now with the new shift rules and everything, we want pitchers who keep the ball out of play. And the best way to keep baseball out of play is have the batter swing and miss at it. So I think he's going to get 15 or 20 starts in the major leagues this year. And I think there's a good chance they're going to be fantasy relevant, even in mixed leagues.
Yeah. And sometimes you see these strikeout totals in the minors and it doesn't translate to the majors, but like his stuff's good. Like he's pretty close to being ready. I actually took him in NL only labor. I think I put like 6 or 7 down on him in the draft. I wasn't expecting him to break camp with the team, but you know, as chatter continued throughout March, I thought, oh, maybe I'll be surprised. But I don't think it's the worst outcome that he doesn't make the opening day roster. He's someone we will hear from, so continue to track him. Interesting development here with Juan Soto. He was back from the World Baseball Classic, was playing in a B game on Sunday, and he had to leave due to what's being called a mild left oblique strain. I believe he hurt his oblique when he struck out in that minor league game. Just felt a little bit of soreness. They're just calling him day to day right now, and he left the game as a precaution. Obviously, he's close to opening day as we are at this point. No reason to take a chance with one of the best players in baseball, but we know how tricky these oblique situations can be. So, what do you do here with him? I mean, if you had a draft tonight, where would you put Juan Soto? Would it affect your ability to draft him at all?
A little bit. He'd be more reactive than proactive pick for me. And also, even though you don't draft Juan Soto for his stolen bases, remember, he didn't run at all once he joined the Padres last year. And I think it may make a sense of, they may just tell him, look, we don't want you to have anything to do on the bases. Just play station to station. No running. We need you healthy. You know, even on defense, you know, no, you don't need to lay out. Don't take on any fences. You know, we need you to be the Juan Soto, 435 OBP Juan Soto, the 350 average Juan Soto. I would take him in the second half of the first round. But I would, again, reactive pick for me, not proactive pick.
Right. He's been great this spring, too, both in the Cactus League and the World Baseball Classic. Hit a couple of homers in the World Baseball Classic. So hopefully that's a minor thing, but we'll have to continue to track that here in the coming days. Final note before we go here, the Rockies signed Jurickson Profar. Kind of been a lot of chatter about Profar and the Rockies of late. And honestly, a little weird that Profar lasted this long in free agency. But you look at all the injuries the Rockies have been dealing with recently. I mentioned Ryan McMahon going to miss the season with a shoulder injury. Randall Grichuk start to the season is going to be delayed. He had sports hernia surgery. I think it was in February. Sean Bouchard needs bicep surgery. Charlie Blackman has a back issue. So they just need this depth. And not only does it appear that Profar is going to get regular at bats, he's supposed to play left field, but Daniel Allen Tuck of the Denver Gazette writes that they are planning to use him potentially out of the leadoff spot in the Rockies lineup. So player signs with Rockies, automatically more interesting. I think Profar is a fringy mixed league guy, but in Coors Field, good, obviously. Batting leadoff for the Rockies is like double good. Now, the tough thing with Profar is that he's only outfield eligible. Like those days of him qualifying at second base, probably not going to happen. But what do you think of Profar now? Is, you know, if you are in a mixed league with, I don't know, 5 outfielder spots and a couple of utility spots, are you drafting Profar?
He'd be a good guy for the bench. He went to one of the few teams where I could see him having a fair amount of fantasy value because he'll get a bump from the park, obviously. And the Rockies are thin enough that they need to play him. Yep. There's a lot of teams, if he had signed with, I know the Yankees were at one point interested in Profar, and I just think that they would have signed him as a bench option, that he wouldn't have been seen as a starter. unless everything went wrong. I wonder if the Astros, if they had a chance at Profar now that Altuve's hurt, if they still view Profar as viable defensively at second base, which may or may not be the case. As you say, you know, there's once upon a time Profar qualified just about. He was kind of a Brendan Donovan. He played just about everywhere, although never really a great defender, but he was serviceable just about anywhere on the diamond. And, man, I'm old enough to remember when Jurickson Profar was the number one prospect in baseball, which just goes to show you how hard baseball is. He's had a lot of things go wrong. He did. I feel like he had, if you ran his career 100 times, he had one of the worst possible runouts you could have the actual career that he's had. But let's say you're in a 15-team mixed league. I'd prefer to have an outfield where he didn't start for me, but I think he'd be really good off the bench. I think he'd be like a really good outfielder six. Sounds like I'm damning with faint praise. I'll squeeze him into the top 80 of the outfield, but that's where it is, like somewhere in the 68 to 80 range.
So Profar hit 243, 15 homers, 723 OPS over 152 games with the Padres last season. Also stole five bases. He stole 10 2 years ago. There's a big field there in Denver.
Good OBP skills too.
Yeah, good patience, contact skills as well. You could see that average going up, getting on base in front of the Rockies lineup isn't great, but Chris Bryant is going to play right field now with Profar in left. Charlie Blackman likely to be the primary DH. CJ Krohn's there. They have some pieces. I don't think they're not what they were a few years ago for sure. But I still think it's a good place for Profar. And yeah, I think I'm aligned with you on what I'm thinking with Profar here. I think in like a five outfielder format, he should absolutely be drafted. But I think it would be nice to have the luxury from week to week to have to make a decision as to when you want to use him. Obviously, you want to use him at Coors Field as opposed to being on the road. But I think an interesting one to track here. So, Scott, our next episode on Wednesday is going to be over under win totals for the 2023 season. So taking a little bit of a break from fantasy. I love getting into win total over unders. I don't know about you.
Oh, for sure. Straight cash, homie.
Yeah, so we'll have Von Dalzell from NBC Sports Edge, one of our betting gurus, to join us here. And we're actually going to pick our teams in a draft format, which we will do in the next day or so, snake draft. So that should be a lot of fun. We'll be ready for that on Wednesday. I'm going to start crunching the numbers right now. But thanks for joining me once again, Scott, and see you Wednesday.
Sounds good.
All right. Make sure to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review if you like what you're hearing. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, and we will see you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.